This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm John Cruz.
And I'm Mike Beats.
And tonight we are going to talk about the Tournament of Champions. By some odd whatever, the three of us have all been, or two of you still are, on the advisory committee. And one of the things that I think people have some belief that this is a star chamber, that we don't talk about anything here under, you know, Omerta and, you know, so forth and so on. I mean, certainly there are things that are confidential that we're not going to talk about, like the opinion of the committee about schools or something like that. But what goes on in the committee and what happens? And I think it's a good topic for people to know exactly how the TOC advisory committee works. So that's the topic for tonight. How did you two get on the committee anyhow?
J.W. Patterson sent me an email. I believe actually that I was your replacement, Jim.
And you're doing a fine job.
It was a very emotional passing of the torch. I felt if I had to replace anyone or succeed anyone,
no one better to replace than me.
I think two people had to replace Jim, because I think you and Joe got on around the same time.
True, although I think Joe actually replaced Tim Averill, because it was the same year that Tim stepped down.
Got it.
But it was an emotional moment.
For you, I mean, I think I was on it. I mean, I was on it back in the late 90s, early
for a while,
aughts, whatever. I was on there for a while, up until
you're up there
Craig,
until the year
about 5 years ago.
Yeah, you were up there until I think it was a little more than that, right? Because I'm pretty sure you were up there until I came up. Well, whatever.
So I was doing it back there, and Sadako was still in. Was still at Bronx when I started doing it, and then he left, and then there was the interregnum, and now you're there, you know. So I was doing it back then, and there were some similarities, some differences. A lot of the people are the same people. I mean, I think a lot of the people have been there since day one or close.
Well, this is Beats's second term too, right, Beats?
Yeah, I was on it for a couple years in the middle late 90s, and then I was not on it for a while, and then
now you're back.
Now I'm back. I mean, I think a lot of, I mean, in the Midwest, I think was maybe, well, it may have been overrepresented. I think there was a Nebraska person, an Iowa person, and two Minnesota people on there. So
we had more people on the advisory committee than there were tournaments in the Midwest at one point. I mean, I guess the committee is theoretically geographically balanced, or the
it
point is.
It's
to be
pretty
geographically balanced,
well,
which makes sense.
Initially, I was on the committee because I was I was helping in the tab room,
right?
And I think that was in like 97 or 98 or something like that.
Yeah, I remember you and Min were the first people I ever saw using TRPC, because everything prior to that had been on the Mac. It was
Tabroom on the Mac.
Yeah,
that's right.
Which was the most flaky Tabroom. I mean, it never didn't crash. I mean, no tournament ever ran from beginning to end on the Mac. And I've used that Mac version because we had some problems with the PC once or twice, and it's frightening. But seeing it on, I mean, the PC, I was like, oh, my God, the scales fell from my eyes when I saw you guys working it on the PC. And you were very, oh, yeah, it works on the PC, no problem. And that was a good deal. You know, so I remember back then when I was on it, you were, you know, at some point working with Min on
that's right.
With tabbing.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I guess that was actually, and MJP was in there at that point, or at least talked about it. I remember Min talking about trying to do it.
I think that what we did is we did some here. If memory serves, we did MJP, but it didn't start until round three.
That sounds right.
I think we preset the first two rounds, and then people would hand in their MJP during, like, before first round. And then Min and I would spend the first two rounds entering the MJP. There was no import.
Right,
ability
right.
Back then, and so
did you do the presets with TRPC, or did you just throw cards in the air?
TRPC did it, and I think we did regional constraints.
Because I don't like the presets in TRPC to me are a little flaky. We've talked about this, not here, but in other places. I mean, one of the things that people might not know is that if you have a single member of a team, at a tournament, the first thing that TRPC does is it pairs up all the singles in a random round, which means that if you have like five or six people that were invited to be in the round robin or something, and everybody else is one of 20, the six people that came for the round robin all hit each other in the first round.
This has been a problem a couple of times. Actually, Beats was the one who I think may have localized what the problem was, right? Because I remember this happened at the very first New York City Invitational that I ran, and it also happened, the opposite issue happened to at the TOC, right, with Beats' kids and Joe Vaughn's kids. Couple of years back, right?
Yeah, with Doug Lieb.
That was probably because they were the last ones to be paired because they were so easy to pair them all against each other.
Right, that's exactly what happened.
And Doug got three Adinas in a row. Pretty rough.
Yeah, and that's back when we did...
three presets.
Did three presets. Yeah. And I think that changed sort of without Dr. Patterson's knowing. I think that that it was just a decision that was made that we were just going to do two presets.
Well, with any luck, he's not listening to this, so we'll be okay.
Well, I remember he cornered me and was like, did you know we were doing two presets instead of three?
I think it was my first year on the committee, right? I remember this. I mean, you know, I'm just pointing out one thing. Dr. Patterson is a big fan of the iPod, so he might be listening to this podcast right now. Hey, JW.
Anyway, the whole point, we should say this, the whole point, at least, and correct me if it's changed, but I don't think it has. I mean, the whole point of the advisory committee is exactly that word, advisory.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
It is. I mean, all the decisions were always made by JW and not made at the committee meeting, because the committee would meet a couple of times. I mean, some things might clearly have been decided, but for the most part, I mean, there was the big meeting was always at TOC, and there were always a couple of other smaller meetings during the year at Glen Brooks and or Emory for whatever reason, but the big one was the one at the TOC. And primarily the discussion, I mean, there were two things. There were two things that were the subject of the discussion. One of the things was the running of TOC itself, the running of that tournament, things that should be changed or improved, whatever. And the other thing was the selecting of the tournaments and how many bids the tournaments are going to get.
And, that's true.
Yeah, and so I assume it hasn't, I mean, that's still the business that you guys are in. Yeah.
And now I think, and I don't know if it was in the past, but should we name the members of the committee?
I think we could.
Everybody
do that.
Knows who. I mean, yeah. I mean, they're
I don't
not
know
stopped.
That everybody knows that.
But no, I mean, everybody might not know, but I don't think it's any secret. I mean, it's not
and,
meant to be.
And it should be said that the members of the committee are supposed to sort of report on that region. So,
correct.
You know, people should contact the closest person to them if they have questions.
If there's a exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So who is on there?
Okay. So the 2010. Do you want me to do it?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Okay, the 2010 TOC Advisory Committee consists of Mike Beats of Harvard Westlake School, Mike Burton, who is formerly at Eastside Catholic, George Clemens of Lake Highland.
So
Florida.
Mike is up in Seattle, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And he also taps.
That's correct.
That's right. He always works in taps.
Works with Greg Malice. So usually last year Dave Houston tapped. So like I said, Mike Beats, Harvard Westlake in California. Mike Burton, retired in Washington State. George Clemens of Lake Highland in Florida. Wes Craven, not the film director, of South Eugene High School in Oregon. That joke
formally
does actually
South
get
Eugene.
Old. Okay. Oh, that's true. That is true. He is formerly South Eugene. Yours truly, John Cruz of Bronx Science in New York. Lexi Green of College Prep in California. Candy King. Now, I thought that last year she was saying was her last year, but I think she actually is still on it this year.
Mm-hmm.
From Texas. Dave McGinnis of Valley High School in Iowa. Tom Rollins of the Potomac School in Virginia. Aaron Timmons of the Green Hill School in Texas. Joe Vaughn of Scarsdale High School in New York. And finally, Pam Katie Wyckoff of Apple Valley High School in Minnesota.
That does sound geographically balanced. I mean, that does
it
sound
is.
Where the
Definitely.
Debates are. Yeah,
Definitely. And I think it's similarly geographically balanced on all the other committees as well. I'm looking over a list that I have, and it's pretty.
That's right. There are other. There's a committee for policy, and presumably, I guess there is one for public forum now.
PF,
too.
Yep, and congressional debate
in
Congress. Oh my God, I guess I knew the Congress was going on. It just doesn't register. that Congress is going on.
It's true.
At TOC. I remember the PF starting, and there wasn't really a committee. It was just sort of getting off the ground. I mean, part of it is, I think, from JW's point of view, should I do this? Is it going to make sense to do it? So forth and so on. You start a little slowly, see what happens, see if it really works. See if the caliber of debater or, you know, well, I think they're all debate activities.
I think that
the caliber is high.
There's also somewhat of an element of protecting the trademark of the TOC. I mean, the there's now the extent TOC and
the IE TOC.
And, I think JW could have good grounds to, anyway.
But I don't think people don't know the difference.
I don't think that's true. I think,
really?
I mean, I get emails from people asking about the extent TOC and, and about the IE.
But maybe at least the debaters know the difference. Maybe
sure,
that's
the
true.
IE people or whatever don't know the difference. Okay, so the obvious question that anyone probably has. We have some. Let me look.
I've got the questions right in front of me.
Yeah. What are those? I mean, why don't you start those?
Yeah, I think I'll pose each question as they come up. A couple of people submitted some pretty good questions, I think. So, I think the first question that makes sense is I'm just looking at how to do it. Colin Scott from Torrey Pines High School in California asks, how are at-larges decided? I think that is a very common question because I think a lot of kids don't quite know how that works. They know that there are applications, but where does it go from there?
There's applications and they're $75.
They are $75.
Yeah, $75 you'll never see again. Okay, yeah. So, and you have to have a bid, one bid already.
Yes.
And then you have to provide your curriculum vitae of all the other things you did and, your record for the year. I guess it's 2 years, actually, isn't it?
Just one year.
I guess it's just that 1 year. I'm thinking of Emory, which has the two years.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Emory is 2 years. And you could include, there's a space where you can include other thoughts, and I guess you could refer to previous years.
That was actually a big discussion point when I was on the committee, whether we would allow people to write on the back and to write more than just the information. Because the key thing was when we would sit down and talk about how, I mean, because what happened, all right, backtrack a little bit. People fill out the forms, and then those forms are sent to each member of the advisory committee. And then all the advisory committee people, this is the one thing that the advisors actually do, and not JW. The advisors rank them all, and it goes back to JW, and he just takes them as they've been sent to him. And he takes the top ones that we all ranked. And we had long discussions about how we were ranking them. Mm-hmm. We did analysis of how our rankings were working.
Still the listings.
And one of the things that the one of the few things we did about all of this yapping was to allow people to say more. And I found that interesting because if I were to look at somebody's record for the year, I would make a judgment. And then you flip it over and it might say something that would change that judgment. Usually it didn't. It'd be funny. I would get someone would have two bids from a school. I mean, two at-larges submitted from one school. And I would look at them and I said, this guy's really strong and this guy isn't so strong. And then I flip them over and the coach would be saying the exact opposite. Well, this guy's really a lot stronger. And I'm thinking, that's weird. But it was nice to be able to have that extra input. I mean, the coach knows who his better debaters are, obviously. And so to have the coach be able to say it, when you think they're both strong or one of them's a lot stronger, there's some missing information, there's some reason or something. Now, that was actually good.
Similarly, some people choose to write background about things we might want to consider about their application specifically. In other words, did they overcome great financial hardship to compete? Would this be particularly meaningful? Would they be the first person in their school to ever go to the TOC? Did they have only a limited number of tournaments, so we should consider that? Et cetera, et cetera. Are they from a geographically isolated area, so getting to bid tournaments alone might be difficult? All those things are often included.
Here's my thing. I would look at records, and there's a lot of factors to figure in, but this is one very simple one. Okay, I have somebody who keeps dropping in the bid round. Mm-hmm. Now, does that mean they're almost made it and they're really close, or you know, this schmuck kept dropping in the bid round. And I never really knew how to put some of that together. And that was one of the things we talked about. We were all interpreting the exact same information radically different ways, although, when and you probably still see this, when you do the math, most of the placements are pretty close to everybody else's. They're off by a little bit, but we used to hand them in. There'd be some discrepancies, of course, but pretty much the top, everybody's top 20 were about the same top 20, and everybody's bottom 20 were the same bottom 20, and the vast middle was the same vast middle. We came up with the same conclusions, but we came up with them in different ways when we actually compared notes.
I think that, you know, some people approach, I mean, how do you weigh a kid who went to one bid tournament and won it, and that was their only opportunity, versus someone that goes to 10 bid tournaments and drops in the bid round in 9 of them.
See, I like that one kid more than I like that other kid.
And that, I mean, that's just a matter of, I mean, that's a matter of preference where, you know, where I think there's going to be a difference between just the paradigm of the at-large committee member. And then I don't think that there's necessarily consistency to that either, right? Yeah. Like, I could rank that first kid 1, the next kid 2, but then another kid who went to 2 bid tournaments and got to semis of each of them, you know, I might rank a little bit lower. Right. So, you know, I think that there isn't a whole lot of consistency. I've never really liked the personal statement. I mean, I've done personal statements in the past. I've always thought that they, I think they might be a little, they might add a little bit too much politics into it. I think that, I mean, when the committee, I mean, is necessarily political to some degree. It has, I mean, it just is. We're humans.
It's
going to
be. You can't get away from that.
You can't. And, you know, I think that there's probably, I would rather see the data. I would rather see who you debated, you know, who won and who the judge was. And I would, you know, give me a list of all the people that are at the TOC and how have you fared against those people. You know,
yeah, I always like that information. I beat so and so, and they have X number of bids or something like that in a break round, not necessarily.
Yeah,
a single
I think
round.
Actually, and I might be completely off here. I think Ted Belch is working on revising the at-large form to have more space for that information as opposed
that's good information
as opposed to the narrative information because. You know, a lot of that just depends on does the kid have a coach that's willing to put the time into write one of those things.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean anything about the real quality of the kids. It just means the quality of the coach and how much time they had on their hands to write this thing and how influential they think they can be. I always used to do my sorting first.
And how influential
first.
That coach is. I mean,
if I never heard of the person, they could be much more right than somebody I know. But somebody I know, their comments will have more weight.
On the other hand, I have to say that I kind of like the personal statements only because I agree that on a certain level, you know, perhaps a higher level than is comfortable to admit, but on, you know, on a level, the advisory committee is political. And I already know who that person's coach is, right? So getting to hear something separate, you know, getting to hear something, I think, I don't know that it levels the playing field, but at least I like to hear, to know that I'm hearing potentially from a coach that I don't know as well. I can think of one or two applications that have come in where a coach who I didn't know as well wrote a really, really good statement, and I don't think I would have found out that information otherwise. And whether I should be actively, you know, it's up for debate if personal information should matter a lot, but since I already know probably the personal information of the people who are coached by coaches I know, getting an input from somebody who I don't know I think is good. But yeah, I mean, it's debatable.
So I used to do all the – I did it all by numbers first, and then I would turn them over and do the other side and then see if that changed anything. You know.
Yeah, I guess I always just sort of – I mean, the first question is I ask, and this is actually a question on the ballot, is this person going to be competitive at the TOC? Yes.
Yeah.
Or is it, does this person belong at the TSC?
I mean, that's the ultimate question.
And it says, and you have the right to say yes or no to that question, regardless of how you rank them. But, you know, LD is a little bit different from policy debate, where the at-larges in policy debate, I think, traditionally don't do extremely well. In Lincoln-Douglas debate, at-larges, you know, I think there was a kid from College Prep who was a quarterfinalist, and he was an at-large bid. And I think that there are always kids who...
Yeah, I brought a kid who broke who was an at-large.
Yeah.
Right, Justin Becker.
Yeah. I mean, he had actually qualified the year before, and as a senior, for whatever reason, he only got one bid. And then he broke. Yeah, so.
Yeah, so it's I mean, I could actually the TOC field could be expanded to 128, and I think that, you know, and that's something that Lexi has always tried to push Dr. Pedersen to do. And
yeah, he does seem wedded. But, I mean, the next thing, I mean, the number of people at the tournament he likes is, I guess, 70, 72.
Well, he likes it to be, I think that he sort of likes this idea of it being like the NCAA March Madness sort of thing. I think he likes that always breaking to 16. And I mean,
he likes it, and a clean break.
Yes.
A clean break, which is why we have the bubble rounds.
Well, so the bubble rounds.
Which were new. When did the bubble rounds, I think that was in my generation.
Well, I was actually the one that initially proposed it to the committee to have this bubble round. And I think that the initial response was yes from the LD committee, but no from the policy committee. And then I think eventually they evened it out.
The goal being just not to have them, of course, because you would hope that it would break and you wouldn't have to do it, which is fine.
Right.
But to having it certainly works out. I prefer it. I mean, certainly there. I mean, that it sets the tone. What are some of the other questions on there, John?
Let me just pull up one that I think.
Oh, so we should finish the at-large discussion. Mm. So then, what happens is the list is.
Oh yeah, we didn't.
Rank them one. You rank them all the way through. So if there's 50 applications, you rank one through 50, and it gets tough at the end. But anyway, you submit it to Linda Barker, who is the secretary. And anytime you email Dr. Pedersen, you should also CC Linda Barker and Roger Soult. Then I think based on that, they just go down the list, down the list, down the list. And there have been instances where people are asked the day before if they want to come.
It happens almost every year, actually.
Yeah.
This past year, and I don't think there's any secret about this, Colger King from Regis High School was asked, I believe, the day before, and went 3-4, which I think is actually quite good for a day's worth of preparation. I've had people a few years ago. Melanie Plaza was asked very, very, very close to the deadline. And people come all the time. There are people who come on basically red-eye flights at the last minute.
That's right.
Kunal Raygor, I think, did that a little while ago. So then
the ranking goes down, and then they go one by. I think they usually – they give the committee 2 weeks from when the deadline is to submit our responses. And then from there, the list is just taken, and they just go down the list from what I understand.
One thing we should point out is that the number varies from year to year, how many you actually take.
Well, that's a different question. We'll get to that.
Yeah, okay.
Unless you want to ask it now, because – okay, we may as well ask it now. Steven Adler of Mercer Island High School in Washington asks, about how many people does the advisory committee usually admit through at-large? I just want to preface by saying I don't really know the number. Maybe you guys do. But it's funny. Every year – there's the paranoid rumor that no one is going to get in on an at-large. And I guess one thing that's really different about LD and policy, and I think, you know, this is a separate discussion, really, but people who go to policy bid tournaments at this point, that is what they're going for the TOC. I would make that generalization in almost all cases. Like, that is the definite goal. Whereas I think that in LD, there are more frequently people who just don't go after they qualify. For whatever reason, you know, prom, AP exams. The TSC has a really unfortunate conflict with the AP exams every year. There seems to be more no-shows in LD than there are in policy.
I think that also has to do with the fact that in policy you'd be letting down your partner too if you didn't go.
Right. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
There's more to your commitment than just your own personal dedication. I mean, when I've watched the numbers, I mean, we were doing it would be anywhere from starting out 4, 5, 6, as many as 10, I think, were taken at times.
I think it's gone beyond that. I think 12 or 14 sometimes it goes down to. You know, and that's just sort of a – the committee doesn't let people in. The committee makes a number, and then they at the debate office at the University of Kentucky decide – what that number is going to be, and usually they'll try to end up with a field of between 72 and 76 or 72 and 78 kids. that's what they try. They try to make sure there's not a buy, right. And then mm-hmm. they try to have an even number. The goal is to minimize the number of runoff rounds, but there's also a financial incentive for the TOC to also let people in, because if we went down the road of one or two kids getting in all the time, fewer people are going to apply, and they make, you know, $75 every time someone applies.
Yeah, no, so. You're not going to pay $75 if you don't think you have a chance. If you're just throwing away the money. So if there's like how many people at large usually apply? I remember them being stacks of them.
Yeah,
so 50 or so. Yeah, but between, I mean, 1 year I think we had as little as like 24.
But it's been more than that.
But I think usually it's up in the 40s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's tough to rank them all the way down there.
Definitely.
But yeah, for those of you who are going to fill out applications, for me, I really want to see, you know, who you beat, who the judge was, and so on. That to me is an important thing. So.
I think I'm a big believer in mitigating circumstances. I want to know what your deal is. I do think that personal statements help. I'm also going to just say, for the sake of full disclosure, since I may as well, some people would probably strongly disagree with me on this, but this may be because I debated a very small team that was very local. I have a soft spot for schools or for kids who would be their first entry from their school. I think that there's an argument to be made that is not an overriding factor, but something to be considered, that there are access issues with the TOC. But that could be another – that's really a different discussion, I guess. All right.
You just broke my heart, John.
I'm glad to hear that. Okay. Okay. Jacob Nails of Stars Mill High School in Georgia asks, how exactly does the TOC Advisory Committee choose bids? What are the criteria that go into the choosing process? Which are most and least important? Could you give examples of tournaments that have been chosen largely on a single criterion, e.g. they've gotten bids simply because of their geographic placement or sheer size or quality? Why don't we break that one down? How exactly does the TOC Advisory Committee choose bids?
There's no answer to that.
Well, the exact way that we do it is we vote. Then that vote is counted, and here's how the meeting goes. The meeting goes where we start at the Octos level bid tournaments, and we say, do any of these need to be changed? We discuss them. Then we go down to the quarter bid tournaments. Do any of these need to be changed? We discuss them. We go down to semis and so on. Then there is new business, where sometimes someone will come in and present on behalf of their tournament. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'll be given a history of tabulation sheets that will – or tabulation – what year is this? A packet from a couple years of the tournament to, you know, show they have a strength in their pool and their judging pool and so on. And then basically for every tournament that is – discussed, from the Octos bid tournaments to the finals bid tournaments to the last tournament, a vote is taken on each one after discussion. And so, I mean, we try to do the meeting within 2 hours, and that's a lot there's a lot of tournaments to discuss. For the most part, we have our field set by the end of the thing, with the understanding that JW has the ability to change anything that he wants at any time.
Right.
That's how that process works. I think that right now the biggest sort of the law that Dr. Patterson has set down is, if we're going to add more bids, we have to take bids away from someone. So he's pretty set on the number that are there to remain constant, the number of bids that are given out to be constant. So there has to be – so if someone is like, this tournament needs to be moved from a semis to a quarters, then we have to say, well, where else are we going to take four bids away? And that can either be done by taking away two finals bids tournaments, moving a couple semis bids tournaments down. From there, we also look at regions, and we try to balance out regions and give, you know, make sure that there are regions that are represented. That's why we have people from different parts of the country. We try to have the ability to look to those members of the committee to see what they have heard about this tournament and so on, and then, you know, that personal testimony from the tournament is a lot what we'll listen to. The elements that we listen to are obviously the quality of the pool, the quality of the judges, how much, you know, does it look like they're spending money, taking time to bring in good judges. And then I think one of the newer things that a lot of people have been talking about, especially when it comes to college tournaments, me being a huge proponent of this, is how much does this tournament give back to the community then too, especially when it comes to college tournaments, because so often college tournaments, especially college tournaments that have prominent policy tournaments, the LD side is just sort of the LD side of the tournament is put in rooms that are a mile and a half away, and you know, they just don't care about the LD pool as much. So I think that that's also become a pretty good point of discussion as well. So that's a lot of factors. But it usually turns out that that almost every vote that we have is unanimous.
Right.
Because of
I remember also one of the things was the sustainability of a tournament, that it was predictable, that it would do it again.
That's
and
right.
I also remember having discussions. Every now and then a tournament just flops and not throwing it out because it had a bad year.
Right.
Sometimes
right.
things happen. And so there's
like weather,
you know. Yeah, I mean, but even just sometimes there would be things we say, well, you know, we don't want to punish them. Let's see what happens next year. Remember, we would do that with a lot of schools because there always seems to be schools coming up and schools going down, and schools coming up and schools going down. And yeah, sometimes it's just an accident and nothing happened and they're back to normal again. And sometimes you are watching a steady growth of power in a particular program and the performance of their tournament, or sometimes you're watching the opposite. And, you know, it became a long-term project to watch what was going on with things. People were very slow to say, to make a change. Just once would not be good enough, at least when I was doing it. One thing, by the way, I don't remember voting. I remember talking about it. I don't remember actually vote. I mean, there might
no,
be...
No, we vote now.
Yeah, there was caucusing, perhaps, from the people who might have been there. But I it could have happened, and I just am forgetting it. But I remember very distinctly not having necessarily always a sense of what people really thought sometimes, or certainly not having necessarily a sense of what might happen. I mean, the schools that were at issue when I was there, sometimes I was surprised at the results when they finally got posted of how they had fared in going up or down or staying where they were.
The only surprise that seems to happen now is just a mistake. Well, one, a mistake is made where a tournament that we said should move from, for example, semis to finals doesn't actually get done, and usually that's by mistake. Or a tournament just shows up that we didn't talk about and it's now on the bid list. That sometimes happens too.
That's true. That seems to be the only time bids are added. So
yeah.
I'm only mentioning that. That's not. I mean, we wouldn't serve if we didn't enjoy the TOC and enjoy JW. So that's not a criticism of the tournament. It's just that I'm mentioning that only because I know some people are going to say, but wait a second, you know, from the point we made before, that bids are zero sum. But wait a second, if you look over the last few years, a couple of bids were added in total. That's because those did not come up in the discussion of the committee.
Well, this is not a TOC issue, but some of these bids don't count. I mean, finals bids don't really add bids because 9 times out of 10, that finals bid goes to somebody who already has a bunch of bids, at least around here. So some of this is of dubious change value, shall we say. It's great for the tournament, but it's not really changing the number of people in a region that are going to the TOC.
Yeah, I think that's that's basically true. I think that you know, where you're really going to add people to the TOC is you almost have to have a quarters bid for it to make
right.
a significant
I agree
yeah, significant mm-hmm. number into the people that, because for the semis and finals bids, unless you're in a vastly underserved region, those bids are usually going to people that have bids anyway.
And how is that, I mean, how is the geography these days? I remember when I was there, one of the big flaws was California, not because we weren't trying to find tournaments there, but there weren't tournaments to find.
That's right.
Always a problem. People will say, how come so-and-so has so many bids? Well, the thing is, because you don't have any tournament there to give the bids to. And
that's
California
right.
was a problem there. The West was a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's definitely getting better. I mean, for sure,
yeah.
that Southern California is getting better. And I even think that it's Southern... It's because... I mean, California is just weird because we have all these league tournaments. And most of the big tournaments are run by colleges who, you know, you don't know... You know, the quality of it is pretty dubious. But there's... I think that a while ago, like Long Beach had a bid and USC had a bid had finals bids, and then those got taken away. And then, with me having moved from Minnesota to California, I think, you know, I shouldn't say never because I don't go back that far, but I'm pretty sure there hasn't ever been anyone on the LD committee from Southern California before. So to give voice to San Diego, Los Angeles, Phoenix, Las Vegas, I sort of see as a circuit. And so for a lot of times, and you can't really blame the committee on this, they would just have to take people's word on it, because there was hardly any first, you know, testimonial. It would just be, you know, we have to do something for this region. But, I think that it's improving. I think that in Southern California especially, it's improving. I mean, there's still parts of the country that I think are vastly underserved. I think that the whole mountain region is underserved. I think you've got that one in Utah.
Yeah.
But you've got nothing in, like... Yeah. Idaho and even mm-hmm. the Northwest is kind of,
I don't know if I agree with that, but yeah, I agree that the mountain region definitely is underrepresented.
And
I'm starting to think the South is underrated.
We've kind of gutted the South. I think that the that for a while the South, you know, LD was kind of wasn't.
Was
I mean,
South.
You had such huge powerhouses, you know, when at Vestavia and at Homewood and at. Even the New Orleans schools, and then suddenly it seemed like within a couple of years there was transition time and the South sort of got, I mean, the South became the place where we said, well, where can we take bids from? Oh, we can take it from the South. I think that that has led to a lot of,
I agree. And I think, I'll say for the sake of full disclosure, I think that there are a couple of up-and-coming tournaments in the South, and I know that on the advisory committee, I plan to mention some of those this coming year. I think that there are a number of tournaments in the South that do deserve consideration.
Mm-hmm.
What else was I going to say?
I guess we should tell people how that they can submit, if you want to submit a tournament, I would recommend doing it early, and I would recommend contacting probably as many people from the advisory committee as you can, and send them a packet. And it should be a packet from the last couple of years. But I think, you know, the committee really wants to look at the longevity of the tournament. If you're student run, probably not going to last very long. We're probably not likely to look favorably. But some longevity, the quality of your tournament, how many prelim rounds do you have, how many out rounds do you have, and then also the quality of your judges, I think are all big things that the committee looks at.
I agree. Okay, I don't want to say, I definitely agree. I think that's a good summary.
Yeah, no. Well, how about one? Is there one more like really loaded question in the?
Well, let's see. Actually, one thing that I want to mention really quickly, because I think that this relates to the bid thing, and that this is not me trying to do a pseudo-askers on here, but Jacob Nails also asked a question, what is the history of the TOC and LD at the TOC? And I think it is interesting to note two things about LD at the TOC. First off, LD at the TOC didn't begin until 1986, which means that LD was around for a while before that. Public Forum got added to the TOC way earlier than LD did in terms of its lifespan, right? I think what's also really interesting in terms of bids, because people, there have been alternative bid structures presented and stuff like that. If you look at the TOC I think it started in 87 when or 88 when really the modern bid structure began. It used to be that there were a list of approved terms and you had to make it to semis at all of that, right? Like, in other words, there was no distinction between tournaments, which I think is sort of interesting to consider.
If you were on the list, it was a semis bid.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that most people could see the limitations of that kind of system.
Well, also, didn't it used to have, like, if you were state champion, it would be worth a bid?
Yeah, and if you made it to your district tournament, that would be worth – if you placed first at your district tournament, that could actually count as a bid too. And that's because the TOC, as JW put it, originally was – he sort of pitched it as prep for nationals.
Right.
Something that he connected more to nationals, which I think is kind of interesting.
Considering now that the people are different. I mean, a lot of the same people, of course, go to both, but the nature of the tournament, the nature of the debating is so different at those two places.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Actually, that answers another one. Jacob Nails asked a lot of questions. How does this tournament relate to nationals, et cetera? Sorry, I'm just looking over this. One question that we can answer in like 1 second, but I think that actually should come up just because I think that this relates to a common misconception people have about the TOC, and we kind of talked about this before, is a question that was submitted by Nick Bubb of Wisconsin, who asks, is public forum structure likely to change again after this year at the tournament? That relates to what we talked about before, which is that there are separate advisory committees for each event, and it's not uncommon for me to get emails from people saying, oh, you know, what can we do about getting a bid at this tournament in terms of public forum, and I should say, speak to this person. So the TOC has been moving to be a little more transparent about these kinds of things. It used to be that it was sort of a mystery to a lot of people who was on the advisory committee. But if you actually go to the TOC's website, it lists who is on each advisory committee. And I will note that Joe Vaughn's last name is misspelled, and he gets very upset about that. So see if they can correct that. Okay. Here's something interesting. Maybe this is not a kosher for us to ask or to answer as former and current advisory committee members, but Jacob Nails asks, what are the shortcomings of the TOC? If you could improve it, how would you? Bidding system, number of rounds, amount of days?
I would not have it during fertilizer season in Kentucky. I mean, get on that campus and oh my God.
Anyway. I'll tell you one thing, that speaking of the dates, I think that a lot of us would say we would change it from AP week. It is a little difficult to coordinate that for a lot of schools. I mean, when the TOC began, the AP exams, I don't even think they existed. And if they did, they certainly didn't have the central role that they increasingly have in schools. But my understanding is that that actually is a little bit beyond the powers of JW at Kentucky.
It's I would move it right over NCFL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to plead the fifth.
And I would also probably... I would make everything just more open. I think that all the voting that the committee does should be open. I think that how we rank at-large bids should be open. I think that how we vote for tournaments to get bids should be open. You know, I just think that kids are paying a lot of money and programs are paying a lot of money for it. And I'm not saying that it has to be open. I'm just saying that from a community perspective, I think that it would allay a lot of concerns about it being in old boys club or whatever, to just be open, because nothing that we do is that it's secretive, I think creates more paranoia about what actually goes on than
I think you're right, but I think part of that there is a certain need to have some a place you can go and have a confidential discussion and know that people aren't going to report out of this and that you're going to feel free to say, you know, I hate that tournament because I hate that guy or something like that.
Yeah,
and
be able to say that kind of stuff. I think that then if just the votes were made public, then people could say, hey, what, you know, they could approach that person. Why did you vote this way on this or whatever? Right. To me, because I think information leaks anyway, and it's sort of my same belief on disclosure and Lincoln, like our case disclosure discussion, that information leaks anyway, so we're just maintaining a power system where people that are on the inside, even if they're not on the committee, get information and have influence, etc. Where I think that if it were just open, I think also opening it up would make people who feel like things need to change some power too, right? They would they would feel empowered to participate a little bit more and be more involved in some of the processes of the TOC.
Yeah, I think it's very true that it is more changeable than people might think.
Yes, and at least the committee is open to change, and I think that and Dr. Patterson and Roger Solt, who's been sitting in on the meetings too, are very open to being responsive to the community and what the community wants. I mean, this year we did the MJP thing, and I think you know, we'll continue that based on community reforms. Yeah. I think another change that I would probably make, and this one's probably a little more controversial, is I think that we should do a system where students are ranked A, B, and C, and then everyone's presets add up to the same number. Not that it would, so that your ranking doesn't matter whether you're an A, B, or C. Just that everyone would hit the same quality of debate or the same, would get a similar preset draw. I think that would also help in some of the equity of the activity as well, or the equity of that tournament, because it's tough to have to hit, you know, to get the two tough preset rounds, because, you know, there are some really, everyone is good there, but there are certainly people that you want to try to avoid until later in the tournament. So I know that was proposed, and I think they do that in policy debate. It was proposed to do it in LD as well, just to, you know, make sure that that some kids aren't getting those super tough draw, and some kids, I think that would also help solve the problem of the way that it pairs multiple kids, that teams with multiple kids hit each other, and singleton kids all hit each other too.
Right. I think that the results should be posted after each round, but I guess that has to do with the transparency issue anyway. So that would be covered.
Well, it's meant to be disclosed. So
yeah,
I mean
what we've been doing.
Yeah, no, I think that would be an easy thing to get to happen, simply because the express goal is to disclose and to know. So there shouldn't be any secrecy. It's getting, we've been on this for a while. We've been on this for 45 minutes. This was good. This is good. Maybe we'll come back some other time, but
probably when we get closer to the TOC.
Yeah. We'll come back.
And I encourage people to keep posting questions. These weren't all the questions, and there were quite a number of good ones. Mm-hmm.
Okay. We talked before we started actually going on the air about the possibility of having any technical discussion. We hadn't had anything when we talked originally. Has anyone of us done something technological in the last 45 minutes that they want to bring up that's new and exciting?
No, I'm playing with bubble wrap.
I admit I passively typed an email on Gmail, so maybe that counts.
Okay. That's good. Email. Today's tech tip is to use email. we like this a lot. Actually, John,
the future is now.
Yeah. John has been today has been a great day of disclosure for Mr. Cruz. He has told everybody that he is madly in love with the theremin.
That could be the tech tip. Theremin.
Who is it? PD Gill was saying he had actually made his own.
You can build a theremin. There are ways to do it. You can get kits from Moog, and I guess you could actually make a theremin-like effect, which I'm guessing is what PD did, because I feel like I would know if he were a thereminist, but that is the word, a thereminist.
Well, he would bring it with him to tournaments?
I don't know. I feel like this would somehow come up. PD Gill was the New York State Magic card champion at one point. I mean, little facts like that are hard to keep to yourself in debate. But,
well, from you, anyhow, yeah.
Maybe. Okay. But, yes, if you don't know what a theremin is, you should look it up online. Theremin. It is the only musical instrument that is performed without physical contact. And I've been obsessed with it since I was a young kid. Those of you who know how nerdy I am, you could probably imagine that being the kind of instrument John Cruise would want to play. The nerdiest instrument imaginable.
I don't know if that's a true fact.
What, that's the only instrument that you play without physical contact? What else is there?
What about when you play, like, the bottles? Like, you, like, blow over a bottle and make...
Well, I said that one before.
Yeah, we talked about blowing,
I think the thing that I should clarify is that those aren't expressly musical instruments. Things like that are like
one would question if the theremin is expressly.
That's not true.
It
was designed to be a musical. It's a musical instrument. Just because it's a.
I think you're being extremely classist by saying the bottle is not an instrument.
And frankly, playing like second trumpet in the marching band in high school. I'm sorry. You know, I don't see you playing the theremin in the marching band.
I played the drums, believe it or not, in the marching band. I actually had to lug around a bass drum. I don't know how that happened.
How hard is that? Bum.
I've also played the timpani. That was exciting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the theremin is a pretty neat instrument, and I will one day learn. It was one of my goals as a youngster, and I've reinvigorated my interest in it. But anyway.
Well, that was an exciting day for all of us that you found the theremin today. Prediction for the weekend. I'll give you a prediction for the weekend. I'm going to be doing, and John, the two of us together are going to be doing mutual judge preferences for the first time. And I predict that we are just going to screw up royally. I think it's going to work out really fine. I'm looking forward to doing it.
I do think we're going to give Beats a call at least once. I have a feeling that's going to happen.
We've got a lot of people on call, but Vaughn is going to be at the tournament, and he did it at Glen Brooks. And is Stefan at the tournament?
Yes.
Okay, so Stefan Bouchard. He's not tabbing, though, right?
I think he is tabbing, possibly. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's not. But
here's what you have to be willing to do. You have to be willing to erase all assignments, rooms, and judges, and just go down the line from wherever you say the critical wherever you say the critical loss is. So if it's like the two downs or the critical loss, and just start placing judges, because what the computer will do oftentimes is do a 4-0 with a 0-4 round, right? And they put the same judge in both those rounds. Well, the 0-4 round doesn't need a preferred judge. So you have to be willing to just erase everything that you have and just start from scratch. I mean, if you make
Sort of thinking that would be the only way to do it. I mean, from what I was looking at when I was playing around with it, is just go in and do the pairings. I mean, we get the pairing up there and just do it in manual.
And then
it
just don't even do the room or the judge. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You just got to make sure that you have your flighting on correctly then. So anyway.
It'll be fun. It'll be interesting.
We'll keep you guys posted.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Gentlemen.
Have a great night.
It's been fine, and see you next week.
See you next week. Good night.
And John, I will see you on Friday. Don't change your people again, for God's sakes. Just names on the page. Okay. I'll see you in a couple of days. Bye-bye.